What's up, everybody? Welcome into a holiday edition of the Celtics Talk podcast, recorded here on Christmas Eve morning as we get ready for Santa's arrival. And we have what has arrived is basketball. And joining me here, as always, is Reindeer Max Letterman. How are you, Max?
I'm doing great. I didn't have enough time to powder my nose, so it might be a little bit red because I got to lead Santa's sleigh later tonight.
It's a good luck. I just went with the simple don't stop believing. So here we are on the heels of a quite the Celtics season opener, taking down the Milwaukee Bucks 122-121 when Jason Tatum banks in a three-pointer and Giannis misses a free throw, which he probably shouldn't even have had to begin with. But Max Letterman, let's just start it off. Like, I think expectations were tempered after the preseason, but the Celtics go out there and steal a W on night number one. How are you feeling about this team?
Man, imagine if the Garden had fans in it. Like, that's what I kept thinking last night is like, oh, it's going to be such a lift when they finally come back, because that place would have been going nuts. Especially imagine when Giannis got that crap call at the end. Oh my God, people would have been going crazy. The refs wouldn't have made the call if the fans were there. That's
right,
my prediction.
That is fair.
You know, and it's not like a conscious thing. But what a game. What a, you know, it wasn't lucky. They earned it. But it was such a roller coaster because it was, you know, kind of a poor start, kind of hanging around there. And then the Celtics took complete control and then blew it. It felt like, and I was already telling myself, yeah, this is a terrible loss, but, you know, we didn't expect them to be even in it. So it's fine. It's going to hurt, but not as bad. And sure enough, they end up pulling it out. And what's fun about my setup here is in the studios in Needham, in the control room there, they have a feed that's much faster than the TV feed. And normally we have access to that as well. But when it's a national game, we don't. But somebody in Needham heard when Tatum hit that shot first. So I heard it in my ear. So it was just like, it was better, honestly, to be able to like watch it and know that it was coming. And hit that shot. Pretty awesome. Great.
It's funny because I was in the office and everybody's feed was at a different point. So there was just like reverberation around the place where it was like, oh my God. Oh. So like, it's just like from every corner, and it was great. And, you know, I didn't know if it was good, if it was bad. And of course to see Tatum bank that in, over Giannis, quite the shot. As he said, he wasn't trying to bank it, but sometimes when you're good like Jason Tatum, you can just make that happen.
Absolutely. It was a little Christmas gift. And it just shows you that Tatum has it. He has something. He's a superstar. And he's had it since he was a rookie. It just, whether it's moments like dunking on LeBron in the conference finals as a small child, or showing up in those Gatorade commercials after his rookie year with Serena Williams, to hitting the game winner versus the Knicks, to just absolutely blowing up versus the Lakers last year, and then, you know, keeping it going for the rest of the season, to just coming into his own last night. And look, like Paul Pierce tweeted out, he didn't call bank, he called game. And, you know, Tatum's a bona fide star. And Jaylen Brown, by the way, quietly was even better last night. Wow. So, and Jaylen, I was just not surprised about Jaylen. He just feels like, you know, especially after struggling shooting in the preseason, to me, like when he struggles, I just am that much more confident in him the next game because he never seems to have two bad games in a row. So I was ready for him to be, you know, to shoot well at least, but to score as many points as he did was pretty impressive. And look, it's a great start to the season. I mean, everyone was so sad last week. So sad. The darkest lead up to the season. And Shemmy played good too. It's like everything that Celtics fans were upset about turned out not to be true last night.
Yeah, it was crazy. Even Time Lord came in, got that block in the second half. Like, there was very little to be, you know, frustrated about. I'm glad you brought up Jaylen. To me, he, as much as we'll fixate on Tatum's banking in that three-pointer, and rightfully so, it's an amazing shot, I thought Jaylen was the story of the game. And what I ended up writing about was, you know, it's funny because, like, you're always trying to pick out these moments that you think will be influential. And so the Bucks get called for illegal defense. Bobby Portis was just like, you know, set up a tent in the key at one point late in the first half. And they had, here were the people on the court. They had Jeff Teague, Marcus Smart, Tristan Thompson, Jalen, and Scheming. Three of those guys on the court shot like 86% or higher from the free throw line last year. And then there's Jalen and Tristan, who are not exactly renowned for their free throw shooting. But as soon as that technical foul was called, like the superstar that he knows he's becoming, Jaylen Brown just beelines to that foul line. And I'm thinking, Jaylen Brown's taking this? He makes it. He was 2 of 9 to that point with 4 points. He was 11 of 15 the rest of the way. And it just felt like, and you hear this all the time, right? A shooter sees one go in, and all of a sudden, they're feeling it. And it's a rhythm shot now. But Jaylen in the second half, when he was hitting all those mid-range jumpers, I thought about this when we were watching Durant last week, like what a luxury it is for a guy to be able to just sort of get into the tiniest bit of space at the elbow, free throw line extended, and be able to make that shot. And Jalen did it consistently for the amount of time he had the ball in his hands last night, 0 turnovers. He was able to create 4 assists, created for himself, made shot. Like this was sort of, I sort of come to expect it from Tatum to make those shots, but for Jalen to do what he did is a really, really encouraging sign for this team.
Yeah, and to shoot them too. And he's never really been shy about shooting, but just to see him just confidently go in there and those weird little kind of floating midair, kind of adjusting in it, like not the smoothest setup to the shot, but maybe a little off balance. But once he's in flight, just gets the ball off with touch, both hands, and it's just... I say this all the time about Jaylen Brown. It's such a credit. It's a, it's credit to the work that he puts in, and you can see the work. You can see the growth from when he was in college, his rookie year. Every single year, he just comes back and it looks rehearsed, it looks practiced, and it looks great. It looks fantastic. It was early in the season last year. I remember thinking, all right, this is just a hot shooting streak. There's no way that this is going to, he's making these crazy finishes inside. I've spent, his entire career, he's missed those. I've always been impressed at his ability to get the shot off, but I didn't think he had great touch. And that's over. He has great touch. He has very soft hands. Those, the ball just, it just never hits the rim. It seems like a lot of those. And, he's a shooter. He's a scorer. And he's a star too. He really is. It's easy to get caught up in the, what the Celtics don't have. Danny didn't pull the trigger on a star, blah, blah, blah. You have two budding stars under contract for the next 4 years that are not even close to hitting their prime yet. And they're already really good. And they're already, you can make an argument. I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out, or how the rest of the East plays out. But Jalen, there's a really good chance he makes the All-Star team this year. Yeah. And, I think Tatum's a lock. You're in a really good spot.
Yeah, and one of the things I worried about is that if the Celtics did start slow, like even if Jalen was playing well, he might get overlooked because I don't think the Celtics will have a great record at midseason. I do think, just like you said, don't get too high, don't get too low. They could go out later this weekend or on Christmas Day and get throttled by the Nets, and we're all sitting here going, okay, temper expectation. But I did think we saw when Tatum and Brown play to their capabilities, even without Kemba out there, the offense looked really good. I think Tristan made a difference. I want to talk about Jeff Teague. Some part of me probably said preseason, new team, maybe it's just a little bit of a hot streak. Maybe this is just a continuation of it, but I've been pleasantly surprised by the little burst he's given it. And, credit to Danny Ainge. I think the Celtics had some obvious needs this offseason, not a whole lot of means to go fill them. Tristan being able to step in last night and start is huge. I think that's going to be monumental moving forward, but did you expect Jeff Teague to be? I certainly didn't expect the three pointers to rain like this. I missed. What are your thoughts on Jeff Teague so far?
Well, yeah, the three pointers are really surprising because he's just not something he's done a lot. I mean, he's been he's had an okay shooting percentage from three, but he's not the volume. That's just exactly why you brought him in. Kemba's not healthy. You need a guy who's got starting experience, former All-Star. Who can score, who can absolutely score. And, the difference between him and Brad Wanamaker, as much as, Wanamaker's a great shooter, you could really trust him on open threes and obviously at the free throw line, but he can't create Teague can. He can't get it. He's not the dynamic, drive and score like Jeff Teague is, and that's why they brought him in. It's why when I was on a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, Teague might be the most important player, not named Jay something, on the Celtics, at least in the early part of the season, because they're going to need someone like him. I thought it was really smart that, you know, this is what Brad does. He likes to keep that first guy off the bench or the second guy off the bench in their bench role, even if there's an injury. So instead of starting Teague, you know, he's keeping Teague in the role he's going to have all year. And he started Marcus. He started the two bigs, but Teague, what a great, you know, if he can keep this up, you know, until Kemba comes back, you know, the Celtics are going to be a really good spot.
So I think Brad was talking about how after that Nets loss, they sat there and defined roles. Like they kind of went around the room and said, okay, you know, let's remember, here's what you do. Here's what we're expecting from you. And more so for the younger guys. But I bet what happened was he was sitting there and he said, look, unless your name starts with a J, you are not the focal point of this team. And Jeff Teague was like, yep. I'm just going to go out there and be the GOAT. My name starts with J, just like Jason and Jalen. Like I don't know if he got the memo that he's not supposed to be as good as he has been, but he's got to keep that up. Like his ability to get past that first defender. You know, sometimes you get blinders on. Like I feel like for a point guard, he doesn't notice the corners as much. Sometimes like Grant and Chemi are set up. Maybe it's just a reflection of he's like, I'm going to take the shot, not Grant and Chemi. And that's perfectly fine. But a pleasant surprise. Let's flip it to another point guard. Marcus Smart, like he comes out in the days leading up to the season and says, I'm a great shooter. If I'm open, I'm going to shoot it. I got like, beyond Celtics Twitter gets it, but a lot of the, I'll call them casuals, and you guys know who you are sitting there ripping your hair out, Phil Perry, about Marcus's shot selection and the idea that he might be a bit more of a gunslinger now that the Celtics need some of his offense without Kemba. And then he goes out and plays the most disciplined game I think we've seen from Marcus Smart. About the only thing you can complain about is that he looks like Coolio Jr. with that haircut. But what did you think of Marcus Smart?
Oh, man, I thought he was great. And look, maybe that was his plan all along. He tricked everyone. He tricked the Bucks too into thinking he's going to be out there, you know, just flame-throwing shots. But look, that's the thing with Marcus is that if he, you know, if his shot selection improves – there's no one that can complain about him anymore. I tell you, I tweeted out the other day, you know, who's the biggest villain for the Celtics? You know, this season, you can be a team, a player, a public figure, whatever. And we got Marcus Smart responses. People said Marcus Smart's shot selection. You know, the overwhelming majority was Chris Middleton, which is hilarious because Giannis
really is
the time defending MVP, but that just shows you how, you know, devastating Chris Middleton has been against the playoffs, especially or against the Celtics, especially in the playoffs. But people were really bitter about Marcus Smart's shot selection. And I've never really had a problem with it because I just feel like it's never cost the Celtics games. Mm-hmm. He's either, you know, he just does too much other stuff that, you know, you look at the box score, he's 1 for 10. You're like, wow, I didn't even notice because he's flying all over the place, stealing the ball, making assists, just making it difficult for the opponent. So, you know, but if he really fixes that, I mean, I already think he's one of the most important Celtics, but you know, it goes to another level. And yeah, a really solid game from Marcus Smart. And I, you know, I'm not going to just throw in some Coolio rap lyrics, but I could, I just want people to know it. It's Christmas. I don't want to do that to people.
1, 2, 3. He almost got 4 charge takes on Giannis.
Yeah, I was trying to think, how can we do the 1, 2, 3, 4, get your yeah. starting point guard in the lane and then on the floor because Giannis
ran. Get your charges on the floor. I don't know. You know, like I was trying to think of the same thing. When I was thinking about whether I was going to write on Smart last night, I said, maybe I need to just, you know, take you on a fantastic voyage or whatever whatever else is. He's too hot. But enough with the 90s. I can sit here all day and do this. A lot of positives all around. I thought Brad was good with his timeouts. You're going to hear an interview coming up with at the end of this episode. I sit down with Brad and talk about all things, about the sideline attire, about assistant coach Evan Turner. So hang around for that. I thought he was good with his timeouts. I thought Chemi, improbably, at no offense, I am king of the Chemi slander. I might have texted a few people in the Celtic media corps when he got subbed in early and said, what is going on here? Brad is relentless with this. And I know they love that matchup against the Bucks. You know, what's the storyline to you that, you know, was below the surface? Like we talked a lot about Jalen, Jason, the starters. Like, which of the bench guys or beyond Teague or which of the, what was most unexpected from you from this game for you?
Well, two things. One was Shemmy for sure. He looks great. My goodness. He looks skinny too. It looks like he slimmed down and he was fast. He was just confidently dribbling the ball, which I've never seen him do since college.
Right.
People don't realize he was an alpha scorer in college. He could do things, but he just never has really looked comfortable in his role as like the eighth guy, just come in, defend and hit shots. But when he kind of just for a couple minutes stretch there, I think it was the second quarter or maybe it was the third. He just absolutely, was a different player, and it was a burst that the Celtics needed. And he had a nice little pass inside. And I think that if they can get like 6 minutes of good Shemmy like that, all your slander will have worked. It will have worked its magic because he heard your slander, all of you, not just you, Chris, everyone out there. Shemmy, he didn't really play enough for people to really care until recently. I feel like this summer and leading up to the season, people are like, how is he still on the team? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, I'm not a Shemmy defender by any means, but. Brad's comfortable with him. Clearly they trust him defensively. And look, I thought he played, much better than Grant did at times last night. I think Grant, again, it's just hard to, he's so small, he struggles with size. And that's unfortunate because we like Grant and hopefully he'll bounce back from his start. But another thing that really surprised me was Tatum had zero free throw attempts.
Yeah. Good call.
I mean, 30 points and zero free throw attempts. And I was like, that's got to be rare. And he's done it a couple other times.
Really? In his
career. And it's nuts because part of it is, he did take a couple more mid-range twos than he normally does or than he normally did last year. And a lot of his paint shots, he took 8 paint shots, but they're kind of further away than the basket. So he wasn't super aggressive going to the basket. But it is, there were a couple times where he's a star. He probably should have gotten a call there if he took any sort of contact. Let's put it this way. If Giannis were going to the basket in those situations, he would have got a call. Giannis got a call for no reason with under a second left in the game. The refs literally just tried to give them the game. Like, I'm not, I feel like I haven't got my heart rate up enough. Let's get overtime so I can get a little bit more of a workout in here. It was ridiculous. That was an awful call.
It was a bad call. And how do you know in that situation, it's going to be a jump ball to the rim. You got to let a little contact go. I agree. It just seemed somewhere Tommy was very upset and, looking down, but maybe he helped out on that second free throw.
Absolutely. He helped out on the bank shot too for Tatum, but yeah, that Perk brought that up, and Scal actually brought up a good point too. He's like, I'm just glad that Giannis ended up missing one because, how many Celtics players would have lost money from getting fined because of that awful call? So, the NBA dodged a bullet there because that was really gross. That was ugly. But Tatum's got to get – he's got to be more aggressive going to the basket, I think, but also the refs –
Man, like giving calls, right? Like,
he didn't seem to be super complaining. Like, he's gone, back and forth a little bit. Last year, I thought he started out not as complainish as he normally is with his arms flailing up.
Yeah. Then he was too much.
Right. And last night, I think there were times where I expected him to throw his hands up and he didn't. He's at least less, his face doesn't look as hurt. He still kind of is upset, but like, he looked like he was maybe treating it a little bit smarter where he went quieter to the ref and kind of talked to him. And Tatum has to understand, flailing your arms up will never get you a call. It hasn't in your 3 years in the NBA. If anything, things like that probably hurt. So be, an adult about it. Don't try to embarrass the ref, even if you're justified. Like, that's the thing, is you could absolutely have gotten smacked in the face and they didn't call it. They're still not going to change the call. They're never going to change the call because you flailed your arms up. Just go to them and say, look, I understand you may not have seen it, but I definitely got slapped in the face. Look next time, and that'll be beneficial to him.
One thing I would say is, especially with the Bucks playing that sort of sunk defense and where, Lopez doesn't leave the rim and you got Giannis hustling over, I think this is a tough team to get free throws against. They sort of challenge you to shoot. Like, I don't expect Jaylen Brown to take that many mid-range jumpers, but that's the shot that was there. And when you can make them pay and loosen them up a little bit, but certainly in general, I do think it's important for this team overall to get to the free throw line more. I think Tatum needs to get there just to ease his own scoring burden. Like, even I looked up and I was like, wow, he got to 30. You know, it didn't feel like a 30-point night, except for that one little outburst. But yeah, in general, they need to get to the line. Let's start spinning it ahead. Christmas Day, Kyrie is back already. Hopefully they don't allow him to burn sage this time and curse the garden floor. What are your expectations going into this one? Because like the Nets have looked really good. Opening night, they only reestablished what we saw in the preseason, that they could be a real juggernaut in the East.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's going to be tough for the Celtics because the Nets are incredibly good and they're deep. They're in the Kumbaya Kyrie phase right now where everything's going well. So
honeymoon Kyrie.
Right. Coffee shop Kyrie. It's going to be fun to hear him say crazy things like it was the first year in Boston. You know, and that's what the people in Cleveland told us. They said, just wait for things to go wrong and Kyrie comes out. But regardless of whether Kyrie is a jerk or not to the media, he's an incredibly talented basketball player. And Kevin Durant is like 10 times better. He is, you know, one of the best basketball players ever. He's one of the greatest scorers in NBA history. And he looks like it, even though he's coming off an Achilles injury where he didn't play basketball for, 18 months. So it's going to be trouble for the Celtics. I will say this. I'm not going to really put too much stock into the game. And this may sound like I'm just setting up for a loss to write it off. But the thing about the Nets is that, you know, they are fragile. They're a fragile team. They have depth when they're healthy. But, Caris LeVert will never play a full season. He never has. He's always hurt. Kyrie's the same way. And those are two really important players for them. And who knows with Durant? They're going to have to be smart and strategic with him to make sure that he's healthy for the playoffs. So, you know, there's a lot of volatility there, I think, with their health. But I think for Christmas Day, it's going to be it could be ugly. I think the Celtics are clearly better than the Warriors. The Warriors looked awful on opening night. So I think part of that is why the Nets looked really good. But also the Nets are good. And, you know, it's going to be – if the Celtics somehow win that game, wow. They are in a much better spot than any of us thought. But, you know, I think the performance that they put on last night, I just – you know, that'll keep them close with the Nets. The Nets are just that good.
So producer John texts in here that Celtics are 2.5-point underdogs, which, you know, you're home. But again, what is home? Is home an advantage this year? Like, I don't know. I think that's a pretty fair spread. I would have thought they were actually going to be bigger dogs against Milwaukee last night, but I think the spread was fairly low. I think it speaks to, again, we sort of had this preseason overreaction. I did want to get your thoughts on this, like just to zip around the East. I think Toronto lost, like,
Miami lost.
And so
Heat fans were in my mentions all week about, the Pat Riley's the big villain because you guys can't beat us.
How about Terry Rozier going off for 42 points and Gordon Hayward having a big night and them losing to Cleveland?
Oh, it was so delicious. I was too busy last night for post game. When there's a national game, I don't have a ton of time in between when the game ends and when our show starts. So I didn't have enough time to dunk on them. And by the end, I felt, kind of petty. But, oh, man, if that game had ended and I was able to be on Twitter at that moment, I would have been dunking on them. Just perfectly encapsulates what's important to you, winning or making money. And look, if it were me, I would have taken that money too. But, they combined for 70 points, was it? And they lost to the Cavs. It wasn't just they lost. They lost to the Cavs. So have fun, Gordon. We're still rooting for Terry, a friend of the program, but screw you, Gordon Hayward, and take it. And no, that's not how it's supposed to look. Your turkey looked terrible on Thanksgiving.
Reindeer's got hot takes today. I wasn't expecting that.
And also, I watched the Sixers game and the Wizards look better, but as much as there's optimism around the Sixers because of Doc Rivers and they have just a better fitting roster, man, Tobias Harris, you reminded me when you were talking about Teague having blinders on. Tobias Harris never passes. He literally puts his hand down. It's like me dribbling a basketball. He looks at the ball when he dribbles it. I don't even know how he makes it to the basket.
That I gotta ask you from the Sixers perspective, would you trade for Harden?
Yeah. I mean, as much as he's really trying to make everyone hate him, and his antics, look, there's a few things in Philly that you really can't get away with. Off-court shenanigans. Although you can get away with the off-court shenanigans if you're good and you show up. And Harden doesn't usually miss games. But I remember someone like Pat Burrell was notorious, not at strip clubs, but just with all of our girlfriends. And if he hit under 270, I mean, he was just hated by the fans until, they won the World Series. It was awesome. Harden, I think, he puts up numbers. He would help them win. It would be the longest game. I actually have meaning to email my friends at work at NBC Sports Philly, say, man, you guys better get some new sponsorship ideas for the free throw line, because, the half your game is going to be at the free throw line with Embiid and Harden.
It's crazy.
But that said, I don't know if it's going to happen. The Rockets don't seem to have a ton of leverage. And, I think if I were making the trade, I don't want them to trade Ben Simmons, but you would for sure trade Ben Simmons for James Harden.
We'll see. I think it'll take a little time here. And who knows by that point whether Harden will have completely destroyed his trade value and maybe won't have to pay. Maybe it will be just Tobias and Picks or something like that. But, probably going to be Ben.
Look, his little shenanigans that got him in trouble off the court, I think may have saved them a game last night, because if he were able to play, they may have had enough players, but they would have been down a bunch of their good players and maybe have just been a guaranteed loss, even if Harden was playing last night. So I don't know. I don't know. Was he even suspended last night? I know he...
So the league said that he would not have been eligible because he violated protocols. And now, but they haven't ruled him out for the next game. But we're also, this again, all this COVID protocol is new to all of us. So we're all trying. I know he's getting fined double the price of a normal fine. So you lose essentially two game checks for every game that you don't play in, or a full game check. Like, I got to double check those numbers, but it's pretty stiff. And it's the NBA's way of saying, like, look, we're going to get through the season. Everyone needs to comply. And please don't go to the club and hold up your maskless luggage while you're doing your thing. So guys gotta be better.
In the NFL and there have been teams that have been able to be pretty good about not having there's huge rosters. So I think I'm sure probably every team's had a positive test of some sort, but some teams have been much worse than others. So it really is about accountability. And when it's the NBA, you have a much smaller roster, it should be easier to control. You just have to be committed. And it's not, you can be perfectly committed. Like, I know people that have tested positive for COVID that have done everything right. So there's, we shouldn't just dunk on people if they end up testing positive. It could just be maybe someone in their family.
Yeah, for sure.
Or their kid goes to daycare and somehow brought it back.
Schools,
Right. So we should be, we should be slow with our criticism. We should wait and see. But someone like James Harden is just begging to be, to be torn apart, because he's flaunting it. And it's pretty clear he's just trying to get kicked out of Houston. But it's a bad example for kids, too. I mean, don't go to strip clubs during a pandemic.
See, fair, reasonable ask.
For all the kids listening out there, don't go to strip clubs during a pandemic.
Don't be like James Harden. Stay home. All right. You've got a busy night ahead. I got you up early and you've got to leave Santa's way all around the world starting pretty soon. So we're going to get out of here pretty soon. I want to say shout out to my mom. If you're listening on the audio version, you can't see me holding up this Bojangles bag right now. But she came in from South Carolina yesterday, brought some chicken biscuits, some unsweetened iced tea. I don't mean to rub it in, Aaron Nesmith. After your DNP on your debut, we'll maybe tackle that on another pod. Hope Brad Stevens lets you out and show your talents eventually. But for one night, you win, you ride it. Speaking of Brad Stevens, we're going to leave you today with my sit down from him on our media day last week. We talk about, again, his ability to wear polos now. Stick around to the end. He has some fun with Evan Turner. We'll catch you later this week. We'll be back. All the days blend together. I think next Monday we'll have a couple more games to react to here on the Celtics Talk podcast. Until then, like, subscribe, go roast us in the YouTube comments. Enjoy this interview with Brad Stevens. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast. What did Tommy Heinsohn mean to you?
Yeah, I think Tommy, I mean, he meant so much to everybody around here, but I think the fact that he could impact an organization and a region, you know, for 60 years with one team is just remarkable. And, you know, it's one thing to be a player, it's another thing to be a coach, and then it's another thing to be in everybody's living room for the last 30 or 40 years. And so I think that just his overall impact, the kind of person he was always available, and just a real easy, down-to-earth, fun person to be around. And so we will all miss him greatly, for sure.
What was the best advice he gave you?
I mean, he gave it just simple things. I wouldn't say there was, you know, I'd pick his brain on a couple of basketball things here and there, but I'd say it was just simple. I think, you know, what it all boils down to with all those guys that lived that amazing run as players and then him following up with another amazing run as a coach was just, it really is about the people in the room. It's about the people in the room and how they connect. And how they play well together, that they give for each other. And he embodied that. You know, I think that, you know, he loved talking about his teammates and he loved talking about the guys that he got a chance to coach and how special they were.
Reflecting on the bubble now that you've been out for a little bit, just how taxing was it? And, you know, both for you and the players, everybody, like, what was that experience like?
You know, I'm good friends with Angela Duckworth, who wrote the book Grit, and I talked to her right before we left, and she said it'll be challenging at the start, it'll be up and down throughout the course of it, and it'll be the thing you tell your grandkids about after it's over. And I think that's probably it. The basketball was wonderful. As you saw, the basketball was played at a high level. The 3 hours in the gym every day were the best 3 hours of the day. There were times where it felt like the walls were caving in on us because you're in the same building and you're in the same room and you're walking the same paths and feels like Groundhog Day. But the NBA did a good job of keeping us all safe. And you know what? Everybody was fully committed to it. And everybody was fully committed because we knew how important it was to be there. And we knew how important it was to get a chance to talk. We knew how important it was to empower those that weren't able to be there from an economic standpoint in the league, and those that cover the league and everything else. And then we knew that we were really lucky to have a job. You know, we're in the midst of a pandemic. There is hundreds of thousands of people have died. You know, millions and millions have filed for unemployment. You know, everybody has to go to unique measures to work that has a job, but that makes us all really lucky. And so I think we understood that over everything else.
A couple of basketball questions to wrap up. What will be the calling card of this year's team?
If we're good, then we have to defend like we've defended. You know, I think one of the things about last year's team was they really embraced the defensive end of the floor. And then I think we have to play with such a great way about controlling what we can control. You know, I felt like we were great at that at times last year. We were not as good at some big times, and it cost us at the end of the season. I think every year you go in trying to, you manage your margin for error by controlling the controllables. And, you know, our margin for error is not gonna be as big, especially at the start of the season. You know, it's just not. East is better. We're down a few bodies. You know, we are at the start of training camp. We look like we've got a ways to go. And so we're going to have to manage everything we can because, you know, the challenges are great.
How much better is the East?
Well, from the outside looking in, I'd say it looks a lot better, but I thought it was really good last year. You know, I think that even all the way going back 3 years, I think when, you know, you had the Toronto team 3 years ago with Kawhi, and you had us, and we didn't have a great year, but you had the Milwaukee went on that unbelievable regular season run 2 years ago. You could feel that changing at the end of 17-18, and we knew that, right? And it's just gotten better and better. And so obviously you add in the great talent in Brooklyn, you know, a lot of changes, small changes personnel-wise, or coaching-wise around the different teams. So there's always that new bump of enthusiasm, and, you know, you see how long that lasts. But I'll tell you, it's going to be a bear. It's going to be a real challenge. There's every night is difficult in the first part of our schedule, you know, all 38 games, you know, very, very difficult.
What's the biggest area of growth you've seen from Tatum and Brown since they've been here? Obviously, like, we've talked a lot about just the big moments they've been in, but, you know, do you notice, and what else stands out about what they've been through and where they could get to?
Well, there's so many areas of growth that I don't know that you can narrow it down to a couple for each guy, but you can give those guys a goal or two every year and they will meet it. Like, that's just it. They will meet it, because when guys of their caliber are able to focus on something, then they break the narrative. They figure out a way to become better at that. What I am most impressed with is their desire to work and their desire to get better. I was on the treadmill an hour after practice yesterday, and Jason was on one full court with a couple coaches, Jalen was on the other. And, you know, I took a picture for my 15-year-old son and said, this is why, right? Like, that's why. They are growing, they're getting better, they're improving in every area because of their desire to work. So it's not as much about, like, what area did they improve in, it's are they willing to improve? And those guys are willing to improve.
And my last thing, how much trouble did you get in when Evan Turner said you took all the food off the plane that night?
I got no trouble because my wife knew it wasn't true. And I'll get Evan back. I haven't gotten him back yet, but I'll get him back at some point. We're going to spend a lot of time together now. And I'm looking forward to that. We're happy to have Evan back. You know, it's unusual for a guy at his age to decide that he wants to stop playing. And it'll be interesting, like, if you spend a year coaching or looking at the game different or realizing that, you know, coaching's not as fun as playing, maybe he decides he wants to go back. But, you know, that wouldn't be a bad thing. But we're excited he's here, and already his insights have been very valuable.
I was going to say, is there any NBA rule that he can just, if you guys run short on bodies, can he swap back over to a 10-day?
I don't know what the rules are. I'm guessing that would end his coaching career for a while per the rules, but I don't know what the rules are. But he hasn't shown, like, I think he's ready to jump into this next stage of life. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit about it. I tried to talk him out of it because, you know, he can make a lot more money playing right now. And but at the same time, you know, I've coached a lot of guys that, you know, when they get done with their playing career in their late 30s or 40s are trying to play catch up. And there's a real challenge there of now figuring out what you're going to do next. And to be content enough or comfortable enough in his own skin to say, this is what I want to do now. I've made a lot of money and I want to start my next stage of life and my career. I'd say kudos to him. In a lot of ways, it takes a lot of guts to walk away from playing, but it also shows that he's very comfortable with what he's done.
Well, if you ever need a night off from media duties, all the reporters have talked and we've agreed that it's okay if you send Evan out to handle your chores.
Media training will not be one of his responsibilities. It will not be. Otherwise, you know, although we'll keep it, at least it'll keep you guys all occupied and entertained. So that's good.
I mean, like, again, we're all for it. You might have to actually, it might be the first assistant coach you need to stop talking to the media because he could get himself in trouble.
If he can take my spot in the daily scrum, I'd let him. And I know, and if he could take my...
No pushback from here.
And if he could take my spot in the daily scrum, all of Boston media would let him. So I think we're on to something. Maybe we can petition the NBA. I'll get out of it. I'll just do my thing. And you guys can have Evan.